Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. As usual, I'm your host, Cody, and we are wrapping up September's theme of awesome Stephen King books being turned into TV shows and movies. The longest title I think I've had of any theme. So we're wrapping up with a twofer. More than a twofer. Basically, we're talking about It this week. It has been adapted into two main things, and I'll go over them both here, a little bit about the book, and then the movies in the miniseries themselves. So the book, for the folks who don't know what it is, I'm going to spoil a lot of stuff for the new movie as well as the original miniseries and the 2017 chapter one. It is a book that is written in 85, technically released in 1986, by Stephen King. It is about a murderous dancing clown who feeds on fear and nightmares, mostly of children, kills them and eats their flesh, and terrorizes the small town of Derry, Maine. It is probably Stephen King's most notable work. He's got a lot of things, but it is one of the biggest. It's the second longest novel, as I talked about last week with The Stand. The Stand being number one, technically. I mean, this was the longest one until he redid the uncut version of The Stand, and that became the longest of his books. Anyhow, the reason I say that is because this one has the most iconic villain to appear on screen as of right now, in multiple iterations, but also in the zeitgeist, as they say, in pop culture across the board. And is the villain I'm talking about is Pennywise the Dancing Clown, or Pennywise, as he's also known, Bob Gray, many different names. He's shown up, obviously, the miniseries, done in the 90s, which I will go over a little bit here, was probably the most iconic and most remembered look of him. They got it pretty spot on from the book's description of, the biggest thing is the pom poms. It was the biggest thing I remember, them having done really, really well in the miniseries is the red pom poms on the front of his outfit. But anyhow, the biggest thing. Where do I want to start with this? I'll give you a quick overview of the book itself. It's a long book, so I can't go over the whole thing. Basically, it's about a group of people. They start off as kids as well as adults. But basically, these individuals, the seven of them, right? Bill, Richie, Eddie, Ben, Michael, Stan, and Beverly. Seven. The seven of them are tormented by not only bullies in school, with Eddie Bauer and his, or Henry Bauer and his little gang of, miscreants, but, they're also then terrorized by, Pennywise through different nightmares and different visions. And it's the main thing about this is he's visible really only to children that are affected by him. He has this supernatural, he's a supernatural creature, spoiler, that has this this hold in of everybody who lives in Derry, Maine, and Derry, Maine and their surrounding area, actually, technically. And because of this, he causes this underlying fear that goes through the whole town, that he feeds off of, that he gets strength from, and then he he basically kidnaps kids, eats them, and then feeds off their fear as he's doing that, and the fear of anybody around them. And then he essentially stalks his prey. And this one focuses on the seven of that is part of the Losers Club, but it is also there's other ones, a couple other kids that have gone missing before that as well, and during actually, because there's some other ones too. Interesting. Sorry, I was reading a section of what I was doing. It doesn't matter. The book starts off as the with the kids being children, and then jumps in time. Basically, goes so time frame of the books. As the kids, it takes place from 1957 to 1958. When they're adults, it takes place during 1984 and 1985. And I'll get into a little bit of that along the way. When they're kids, they, again, they're fighting the real-life bullies of Henry Bowers and his cronies, as well as when they're adults, they're plagued by a couple different people. How should I put this? The best way to so after they defeat air quotes Pennywise when they're children, the magic in the hold that that it has on the town slowly kind of fades away, and because of it, the murders of the missing children has to fall on somebody, and it happens to be that Henry Bowers is the one that basically has a psychotic break and is then blamed, institutionalized for the murder of the children as well as his father, who's just a dirtbag in general. And so then they're adults, and they come back 27 years later to fulfill the blood oath they made to come back if it is really not dead, which is, by the way, it's not. The adult versions of them have prospered, but have fallen into certain things in their lives that are manifested from their childhood. And I'll go into more of it later when I'm talking about the movies. But part of it is they survived their encounter with Pennywise. And because of this, they leave Derry, and their memories of what happened in Derry fade to a point where they don't remember growing up there. They remember they're from there. They just remember anything that happened there. But their lives, they prosper in their lives, whatever they want to do. Except for there's failings in their own social and economic, or not economic, social and behaviorals and stuff. But that's, again, for a later time. When they return, their memories start to flood back to them, and they remember exactly what happened. And basically, they are then tormented by a even more powerful version of them because of Pennywise, because he has come back after 27 years. He basically is active for feeding for basically 12 to 16 months before he goes into another 27 year long slumber. So they come in the tail end of his emergence back, and because of the more modern day, I mean modern day in this 1985, there's a lot more unrest in the world. He is being able to feed on that innate fear of things like the Cold War and previous world wars that have happened in the past and things like that, racism and all these different things, that he's then basically be able to suck up the fear of this town, become stronger, starts feeding. Again, is towards the end of his feeding cycle, so he's at the most powerful that he could possibly be. The Losers Club comes back. They start regaining their memories. He starts to stalk them again. The power that he has even affects people around them. For example, Beverly's abusive husband follows her to Derry after she basically attempted and murdered him to get away from him and escape to Derry. He follows her. He then essentially becomes what Henry was, is essentially extra limb that Pennywise has to torment them, but a physical form, not just a manifestation of his physical form to them, uses that fear Beverly has to then attract her husband to it's there's a lot to it. But there's ultimately they go into a crazy sci-fi thing where you find out that Bill actually has a wee bit of the shine in him, and he's able to tap into that to battle Pennywise. In its actual form, which is with the deadlights, and is able to battle it and defeat it ultimately, because his friends are fighting the physical form that it has to have to interact with the real world, while he is battling the entity itself, on a I don't want to say spiritual plane, but a mental, basically, battle with it, and they win. So there's a lot in there that I did not go over. All sorts of shit. I mean, it's 1,100 plus pages, so I mean, there's a lot to go over. Anyways, that's the first. That's the quickest I can synopsis up the two sections of the book itself. There's many different. There's actually more than just two sections, but those are the two main halves of the book, the half when they were children and the half when they're adults. And it's actually, there's some flashback stuff in the later half that tells you things you didn't get introduced or didn't get told about. Not that he was leaving it out, but it didn't play to what was happening at the time. You get filled in a lot of stuff that happened between there. And then so I was going to talk about a lot of there's been adaptations of it in many different countries, so much so I couldn't even get a hold of some of the other ones, so I'm just going to talk about the ones released here in the States, mainstream in the States, as well as the movies were released internationally. But I won't go into deep dive of all the actors from both the miniseries and the both movies, because there's way too many of them, and I'm not going to go that far. Basically, in the 1990 television miniseries originally released on ABC, it was essentially two mini movies released. I'm trying to... They were like on... It was like a Monday and a Tuesday, or Monday and Wednesday, or some nonsense. I know I talked about this on the stand too, because that shit was wild there too. Let's use this old calculator here. Let's see. November. Oops, I spelled November wrong. November. Actually, let's just do this. Cancel that. 1990 November Sunday, November 18th, and Tuesday, November 20th. So that was the original thing for it. They made it for very little money. It's $12 million. Well, I say $12 million is a little money. Nowadays, $12 million is a little money. Back then, it was actually quite a bit of money. I want to say it was just two parts. Yeah, it was. Yeah. They changed the time frame for the movie or for the miniseries. Not by much. The affected years is 1959 was the beginning of it when Georgie Dimbro went missing. And it was 1990. Because 1960 is when technically the events of the Losers Club being antagonized by Pennywise. Because of it was November of 1959 is when Georgie was murdered, and then the following summer of 1960 is when the Losers Club was stalked by Pennywise. Jump ahead 30 years instead of 27 years to 1990. They're all adults, and they go from there. So Tim Curry, I'll give you the cast real quick. Both young and adult versions. I won't go over what everyone's been in, but you'll know names. Pennywise the Dancing Clown was portrayed famously by Tim Curry. Fantastically done. Nothing bad to say. He was hindered by time and technology and things like that, but that's not his fault. He was fantastic. There's a whole story you can go about talking about that nonsense that they went through. The Losers Club, Bill Denbrough was played by Richard Thomas as an adult, and then Jonathan Brandis as a young child, as a younger version. Again, you'll know some of these names. I'm not going to go over who they are. John Ritter played older Ben Hanscom. Younger one was Brandon Crane. Which is funny. I'll get into it in a little bit. Reason why it's funny. Annette O'Toole played adult Beverly Marsh. Emily Perkins played young Beverly Marsh. Henry Anderson played older Richie Tozier. Harry Anderson, basically from Night Court, doesn't matter. Seth Green played young Richie Tozier. Dennis Christopher played adult Eddie Kasparak. Adam Frizzarzi played young Eddie Kasparak. Tim Reed played Mike Hanlon, adult Mike Hanlon. Marlon Taylor played young Mike Hanlon. Richard Mauser played adult Stanley Uris, and Ben Heller played young Stanley Uris. The Bowers Gang, Michael Cole played Henry Bowers as an adult. Jared Blanchard played young Henry Bowers. Gabe, I think it's Kauth, played Victor Chris, and Chris Eastman played Belch Huggins. And that's essentially the main group of everybody. There's a lot of other cast members out there. So the reason I brought up Brandon Crane as an interesting thing, as young Ben Hanscom, because he actually made a cameo in It Chapter 2. He played the working assistant of the adult version of Ben Hanscom, played by Jay Ryan. So the literal adult version of the 1990s young Ben Hanscom played the assistant to the new adult version of Ben Hanscom, which is hilarious. That's just a cool little thing that you can trivia bit you can know. Overall, the miniseries did a really good job. It's actually really well done. It has its pain points because there's a lot of things they needed to do with CG effects and things like that that played to the forms that it would take. Pennywise would take. Pennywise is the clown. It is the entity itself. So it takes the form of Pennywise, mostly, but then has other forms to, as he terrorizes the kids, being the mummy, the leper, the werewolf, corpses, the disfigured Georgie, the blood pool for Beverly when she's younger, the fountain of blood, I should say, not blood pool. Dracula, Paul Bunyan. I know that sounds dumb, but you have to understand. And the movie did an amazing job of it. What are their forms? The giant eagle thing. I think it's mainly all of them from the book. The miniseries, he didn't have nearly as many forms. He was mostly just Pennywise all the time. He had a couple other forms he took to taunt them, but it was mostly just Pennywise throughout the whole thing until the very end when he was a terribly done rock spider thingy. It was very awful. So the miniseries did a lot of things very, very well from the books, but had to leave a lot of stuff out for content on TV. It's mainly the violence, the gore that happens. And oddly enough, not a lot of it happened to kids. The werewolf is the most notable, done a little differently in the miniseries than done in the book, but that's what a lot of people, even myself included, a lot of times will often confuse stuff from, because there's elements that were in the miniseries that are from the book, but they're used differently, and the werewolf is one of them. The werewolf is stalking Richie, I believe, at the movie theater, but in the book, the werewolf is from adult version, right? Am I getting that wrong? No, this is when he was a kid. It was an adult, right? I can't remember. It's been a long time since The losers travel to the house of on Nebolt Street, where Eddie, Bill, and Richie have previously encountered it, forcing Pennywise to flee into the sewers after the losers wound it with a silver slug while it is in the form of a werewolf. That's where the werewolf came in. It also shows up as Frankenstein's monster when it killed Vic and Belch. Yep. There's this really disturbing bit. I say disturbing, so there's a lot of it. There's a really disturbing backstory given to one of the Henry Bowers gang. There's four of them all together. There's Henry Bowers. There is Belch Huggins, Vic Chris, and then there's Patrick Hockstetter. Patrick Hockstetter is the first bully to die, right? Yeah. So Beverly at Witness is one of the bullies, Patrick Hockstetter, killed by it in the form of a mass of leeches while emptying a refrigerator he used to trap and kill injured animals, as well as he kills his little brother. But, well, that's a whole different story. So that's another form he takes, is the leeches. It's pretty gnarly. But it's also pretty awesome. So there's a lot of things they had to skip because of, well, physical demands, and things they couldn't do, it's not the stovetop. What's the ironworks? The big old fucking thing that collapses and almost kills, Michael, right? I want to say it's Michael. And his dad, if I'm not mistaken, at the Ironworks. Doesn't matter. It's a giant eagle. It's gnarly. Anyways, so a lot of things they were limited with capabilities on just in general in 1990, but also because of television. And you got to think they have all these people. They're essentially making two movies for $12 million for television. So there's a lot of things they couldn't do. 3 hours total. Found it. Boom. Two-part, three-hour TV movie that retained the core elements of the novel. Boom. Like I said, very well done. Real tough to do something like that. To shrink down 1,100 pages into 3 hours is pretty tough in general. Especially on a budget of $12 million. It sounds a lot, but really it's not. Because you have a lot of people, a lot of actors in it. A lot of, at that time, big known actors. Tim Curry, Richard Thomas. Jonathan Brandis at that point. John Ritter. Annette O'Toole. Harry Anderson. Well, Seth Green was young at that time. Michael Cole. Dennis Christopher. Richard Mauser. I mean, there's a lot of these are big names. And so you had to, I mean, they had to pay them time to make it, as well as time to make it itself was just got to be pretty expensive for back then. And then you have to make it so it's playable on TV where it's not going to alienate people, especially in the late 80s, early 90s, with the whole talking about kidnapping of kids and murdering. Bad time for that to be a thing. Not that it's a good time anytime for that, but in the early 90s is a rough time for that, late 80s, early 90s. Some of us lived through that. Anyhow, that's a miniseries. Well done. Doesn't really hold up with effects nowadays. I have rewatched it. It doesn't really hold up very well. But watch it. It's if you've read the book, you'll actually enjoy it more after the fact than if you remember watching it like I did. Remembering it and then watching it again, I was like, oh no. But having read the book before that, I was like, oh, actually I remember a lot of this, so pretty good. On to the newer versions. It Chapter One, as it's later known as, released in 2017, did gangbusters in the theaters. On a budget of $35 million, they made $700 million. So, I mean, they definitely made enough to break even and then go over to make a sequel. Little known facts, and it's not really a known, like it's not like a fact, I should say, but little known secret in Hollywood is to garner a sequel, which they were definitely planning on, and it looked like Warner Brothers definitely saw the potential in it. So they definitely were going to give them that. So the potential of having it, they would have had to do more than $70 million to break even to garner an actual sequel. So basically the unwritten rule is this: you have to make back your money, then essentially make enough money to finance your sequel or sequels with potential to bring in more money. So when it comes out to the fact that the second one should cost them no extra money to make, because they should then make enough money to make both, to pay off both movies, and have profit from both movies. Does that make sense? So if your movie costs $10 million, you have to do at least $20 million to break even on the first movie. That extra $10 million needs to be able to finance, or basically everything past the $10 million you needed to make the and that's just making it. That's the budget of the movie. That's not including advertising, which is another couple million. Movie like this, there's no real tie-ins. You can't have, there's not really advertisement tie-ins you can have done with it because of the time frame and the it's hard to do. So there's that. So you have to count all that in towards all the money you're making. So you need to be able to pay back not just the budget of the movie, but how much it costs to promote it and put it out. Then anything more than that needs to then pay essentially for what would then be used to make and promote and release the sequel or sequels, depending on what you're doing. The third, anything past that would be then counted towards the money you make in the second one. So, for example, it's not done in its full run yet, but the sequel was $79 million for the budget, and it so far has grossed $386 million. So it still has some ways to go. I mean, it's not done in theaters run either. It's probably got a couple more weeks to go. But anyhow, so that's a quick dive into basic movie math and how they kind of do things. So again, I'm not going to go into everything that these people have done in the past. I will just talk about who's in these movies. I guess I'll go over both for chapter one and two. So I'll go over the mains again. So it's weird that Jessica Chastain gets head billing, but whatever. Jessica Chastain plays adult Beverly Marsh. Sophie Lillis, I don't know how to say her last name, plays young Beverly Marsh. James McAvoy plays adult Bill Dembro. Jaden Martell plays young Bill Dembro. Bill Hader plays adult Richie Tozier. Finn Wolfhard plays young Richie Tozier. Isaiah Mustafa plays adult Mike Hanlon. Chosen Jacobs plays mainly the, basically he also plays young Mike Hanlon. And then Tristan Levi Cox and Torian Matthew Cox plays the 4-year-old version of Mike Hanlon. It's in one scene, so I don't know why they had twins, but whatever. Might have been more to it, but that's all we saw. Jay Ryan, as I said before, plays adult Ben Hanscom. Jeremy Ray Taylor plays young Ben Hanscom. James Ransone plays Eddie Kasprak as an adult. Young Eddie Kasprak is played by Jack Dylan Grazer. Andy Bean plays adult Stanley Uris. And Wyatt Olef plays young Stanley Uris. Bill Skarsgård plays Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Why don't I see Henry Bowers listed there? He's pretty... Well, he's not big in both, but... where is it? Nicholas Hamilton plays young Henry Bower. Does it say in here who plays the older version? Because he's fantastic. Teach Grant, that's who it was. I knew there was a name. Teach Grant plays adult Henry Bowers, and he's fantastic. Everyone's fantastic in both these movies. So good. So, and there's a lot other people in there, because there's of the mains. You have the other bullies in Henry's gang, but they're not. I'm not listed on my little list here, so it doesn't matter. The kid who plays Patrick Hockstetter is actually going to be in something else big. Let me pull it up while I'm thinking about it. Where is it was Owen Teague, right? Owen Teague. Television. Lock and Key, right? Yeah. I think he's still going to be in it. I'm not too sure if he's still going to be in it. But I know he's listed as being in Lock and Key, which is an adaptation of one of my favorite comic books by Joe Hill, who, oddly enough, is Stephen King's son. That's for another day. I've talked about Lock and Key on this show before. When it comes out on Netflix, hopefully sometime next year, I'll talk about it again. Because by then, I'll have a lot of Joe Hill properties to talk about, hopefully. Because he has three that I know of, Lock and Key, in the tall into the tall grass, and Nosferatu. So there's that too. So yeah, that's essentially. Oh, and I should mention, where is he? Because he's fantastic. Where is Georgie Dembro? Where is he listed in my listy thing here? Wolfhard, Chosen Jacobs, Nicholas Hamilton, Owen. There he is. Jackson Robert Scott, who is an amazing actor, plays Georgie Dembro in both movies. He's an amazing little actor. Terrifying, too. Anyway, so I really enjoyed both these. If I had to pick one or the other, the first one is my favorite of the two. The only reason why is because the first one is this almost perfect movie. Actually, I'd almost say it's perfect in its own right. It does an amazing job of adapting the source material, but in a fun way. And I'll explain what I mean by that. In this, instead of just doing exactly the things that were from the book, who, for a fan of the book like myself, would be waiting for and knowing what's going to happen, the director and the writers, mainly the writers, I think, on that. And I mean, I'm sure Andy had some say in it, but the writers then took and changed up the monsters in a way, like mostly in every way. Beverly's is the same, Bill's is the same, and Eddie's is the same. Mike's different in a way. In a way, it is different. Ben's is different. Ben's is fucking terrifying in the movie. Fat boy. Stan's is different. That's all of them. So the only three that are same are Eddie's, Bill's, and Beverly's. Which is really good to see, because Beverly's is haunting on the screen, and that girl is so goddamn good in that role. She's amazing in it. And she's Nancy Drew now, I think, on the TV show or something like that. I could be wrong about that. Doesn't matter. I could look it up, but I'm not going to. I've gone enough off of book. I lost my track. My train of thought. Oh, so they changed enough in the first the children's part of it to make it fresh and new. And not really guessing, because if you know the story, you know who's going to live or die at times. So you have a lot of that that goes over perfectly. The second half, they did the same thing with. They mixed things up but still made it fresh, and they actually encapsulized the terror of the first one. The only problem I have with the second one is not enough of the human antagonists. Henry is a very small portion of it. He's amazing in it. Beverly's husband, Tom, isn't in it as much. And he's in the beginning when he's about to beat her with a belt. But he doesn't follow her to Dairy Main. He doesn't become a puppet to it. Bill's wife never comes to Derry. They're also in L.A. and not in London. Let's see. That's my biggest thing is that for adults, it's the real thing that their fear is based on, which Stephen King did a very good job in the books of emphasizing with Beverly's husband, with Bill's wife. Not that she's a monster, but there's a part of him that she doesn't know about. This is part of it, and she gets dragged into it, and he fears for her. So that's part of the process. Like I said, Henry Bowers being a fucking monster, and then adult Stanley Uris. Now this isn't a bad part. I thought it was amazingly done in this. There's one other thing I thought about though, with the human because of the human antagonists, there's an element of monstrousness that goes beyond that you in the book that goes beyond just their those ones, because there's Eddie's wife and his mother when he's a child, which is done amazingly done in the movies, because the same actress plays his mother in part one and his wife in part two. Hilarious. But there's a lot of that human element that is lost for just the supernatural in the second half that really adds to the adult perspective of the book. I feel I could be wrong. Maybe I am just an asshole who overthought it, but that's the thing I kind of missed. I really wanted to see. And even like that, Henry's section of the movie is very, very short as an adult. And I kind of wish there was more of it because he's haunting. Teach was so good. Like he does such a good job of being the adult Henry Bowers. I literally thought they just filmed that kid in the future. Like, oh, no. All his scenes were filmed when he was a young child. And then later on, as he's an adult, that's just Teach. It's so good. I loved and hate, love to hate, but I loved both the child version of Henry Bowers, as well as the adult version of Henry Bowers. Like I said, I wish there was more of the adult one, like there was in the book. I mean, he's not all over the book, but he is in a lot of the book as an adult. So I kind of missed that. But that's my only real gripe about the movie, which is stupid. And I'm pretty sure all of that was left out because of time. They have to cram a lot of stuff into the two movies. So both movies runtime. Let me do this quick math. Real fast. Let's see. The first one was shorter. So total of the runtime of both movies is 5 hours, over 5 hours, just over 5 hours. That's a lot of content you need to get into. 5 hours is 1,100 pages. And if the rumors are true, and hopefully they are, Andy Muschietti, I think is how you say it, Muschietti, I'm not too sure. He wants to do a supercut of both movies, recut them to tell the story like Steven did in the book, as well as throw in an extra footage that he had cut from the first movie and cut from the second movie that was shot, fully realized, I think, and make a supercut that's going to be upwards of 6 hours, like over 6 hours, he said, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's just, I would love to watch that. Especially if they change up and they edit it differently, so you see some of the stuff as flashbacks. I mean, it would be so amazing. I would just like to see what wasn't used and not deleted scene stuff, which I'm pretty sure I watched the deleted scenes in the first one. Maybe I didn't. I might not have. But anyways, I would love to see that supercut. So if Andy, you're listening, or if someone knows Andy who's listening, which is really unlikely, But if it's out there, go ahead and ask. Let them know that at least one person wants it. This one person. Anyhow, that's it. I try to keep this at 45 minutes. I'm a little bit over now. But there's a lot to talk about. So yeah, that's it for this, for today's episode. We were talking about Stephen King's It. That's it for this month's theme of awesome Stephen King novels being turned into TV shows and movies. And tune in next week when I start a new theme for October, which I'm not too sure what it is yet, but most likely it's going to be horror movies of some sort. I might be doing, I don't know, because it's awesome stuff, so it's either awesome horror movies I already know, or I'll look back at some other stuff and see if there's some new stuff that I should look at, and maybe I'll watch a bunch of stuff. I don't know. Anyhow, I have a whole week to think about it and do something with it. But anyways, it's going to be horror-based something, because it's Halloween time. That's it for this week's episode, everybody. As usual, I am your host, Cody, and at the end of this, like I always say, is let's be awesome.